Lux Radio Theater. Tonight and every Monday night at this time, Lux Radio Theater presents for your entertainment the finest in radio drama. This week we present Quadrille by Noel Coward. It is the year 1873, and the charming and irresponsible Hubert, Marquess of Herendon, and the lovely Charlotte, wife of rugged American railway magnate Axel Deanson, flee together to the Villa Zodiac in the south of France. Axel Deanson persuades the wife of the Marquess to accompany him to the villa in pursuit of the lovers, in an attempt to avert a scandal. Serena, the Marchioness, a woman of sensitivity, reluctantly agrees, though doubtful of the delicacy and the success of such action. As it transpires, both Axel Deanson and Lady Herendon are quite unprepared for the ultimate outcome of their handling of the affair. Listen in a few moments to Quadrille, adapted by Margaret Hume, produced for Lux Radio Theatre by Anne Freed, and directed by Henry Diffenthal.
This table is reserved for you, milord. Ah, here comes a garçon with your coffee. Milord, milady.
Thank you. Courier, I am traveling incognito. The name is Baxter Ellis. A plain monsieur will suffice.
An honor, monsieur. Your train is nearly ready. I will call you 5 minutes before it leaves.
Very good. Charlotte, you will remember our pact. No regrets.
Yes, Hubert. Whatever happens, no regrets.
Ah, coffee. Merci, garçon, merci.
Hubert, I think that clergyman's coming over here.
Excuse me, you are the Marquess of Herendon. I recognize you, sir, my lord, my lady. My name is Spevin.
Spevin? Spevin?
I was the vicar of Cranberry, my lord. The Herendon lies beyond the nearest hill. I noticed on the steamer that your luggage was labeled to Nice.
A man of uncanny observation. Very reverend detective. I tremble for your flock, Mr. Spevin.
That is the reason for my intrusion, my flock. I am now vicar of the English church at Nice, my lord. Could I prevail upon you to honor me with your patronage?
To be an incentive to the Lagans? Well, you can count me for a subscription, at least.
Ah, it is most gracious of you, my lord, most kind.
The name is Baxter Ellis.
Baxter Ellis? But I am...
The address, Via Zodiac, Saint-Guillaume de Fleur. For various reasons, Mr. Spevin, I am traveling incognito. A whim of my doctor's.
Oh.
A new name, he said, coupled with new surroundings and different sights and sounds, will work wonders. Au revoir, Mr. Spevin.
Oh, well, thank you so much. You have been so kind. Oh, so very, very kind.
How could you, Hubert?
A matter of self-preservation.
No English churchgoers will call on us. You seem to forget how... sinful state.
Forget it? I'm glorying in it. To be here, alone with you. What bliss. I've escaped from Serena at last.
Oh, Hubert. How long do you suppose it'll be before they discover where we've gone? Before they follow us?
I doubt if either of them will follow us, even if they do find out where we are. Your coffee, Charlotte.
At once, Catchpole.
Very good, milady.
His lordship left for Herendon last evening as arranged, Catchpole?
Yes, milady. There is a note for you on the bureau.
Thank you. Will Hubert be long away? 10 days at the utmost. I may join him towards the end of the week. The breath of sea air will revive me.
You don't look in need of revival. Your vitality amazes me.
Oh, thank heavens, here's tea.
You haven't even opened Hubert's letter.
Restrain your curiosity until I've drunk a little tea, Harriet. I promise I'll withhold nothing from you.
Oh, really, Serena?
Nothing. Cream or milk?
Cream, if you please.
Well, there'll probably be muffins in that covered dish. You look offended. Don't you care for muffins?
I'm not offended. I'm uneasy. There's something I wish to say to you. I feel it's my duty.
Then it's bound to be unpleasant. I shall have a muffin to fortify myself against the shock. I've been summoning up courage to speak to you, but heavens, is it as bad as that? I merely wish to put you on your guard. But you're so touchy sometimes, Serena. You're quite liable to bite my head off.
Not with a mouth already full of muffin.
It concerns Hubert. I suspected it did. Your tea habit. I saw him the day before yesterday.
So did a number of people. He went to the horse show.
This was in the afternoon. But do continue. I'm on tenterhooks. What was he doing? Couldn't have been anything absolutely beyond the pale in the afternoon. I saw him at the zoo. Hubert was not alone, Serena.
It's difficult to be entirely alone at the zoo.
He was with a woman in a veil.
I sent them both on there after the brougham dropped me off in Regent Street.
Both?
Naomi Charteris, Hubert's cousin, once removed.
It's no use, Serena, trying to pull the wool over my eyes.
I don't know what you mean. Do have a sandwich?
Thank you. How much do you really mind?
Mind what, Harriet, dear?
Hubert carrying on with other women?
There's a perennial adolescence about you that I find endearing.
At all events, you can't be emotionally upset after all these years.
What a curious assumption. Oh, dear, you are looking sullen. How can I coax you back into benevolence? I have it. Hubert's letter.
I have no desire to hear it.
But I want you to. My dear, I'm afraid this letter will be a shock to you. But by the time you receive it, I shall be...
Really? What on earth's the matter?
Hubert says he sold the two small Romneys to Sir Isaac Weisberger.
What could have possessed him to do such a thing without even consulting you?
There are many things that men do without consulting their wives.
Sounds very fishy to me.
Fishier than anything he has ever done before. What is it, Cashwell?
A visitor, m'lady. Mr. Axel Deanson, m'lady. A note in his card, m'lady.
Mr. Axel Deanson?
I have shown him into the drawing room, m'lady.
Just a moment, Cashwell.
Is Mrs. Deanson with him?
No, m'lady. He is alone.
How very odd.
Show Mr. Deanson up here, Cashwell.
Very good, m'lady.
I didn't know you knew the Deansons.
I scarcely do. They were staying with the Tewkesbury's when Hubert and I were there last autumn.
Mrs. Deanson comes from Boston, you know.
Yes. She murmured it to me almost immediately on shaking hands. I've since discovered that in America, to come from Boston is essential.
But he's an entirely different proposition. Quite a rugged American, I'm told. A railway man and very rich indeed. I suppose I shall be snapped at again if I ask what was in his note.
He wishes me to meet him secretly at the zoo.
Oh, you're impossible today, Serena. And this time I really shall leave you.
Yes, you must. He says he wishes to see me privately on a matter of great urgency.
I know perfectly well. It's a formal little note, probably from his wife, inviting you to a ball or to their box at the opera.
Mr. Axel Deanson.
How do you do, Mr. Deanson?
I'm well, ma'am. Thank you.
This is Lady Harriet Ripley.
I am honored.
Oh, we've met once before, Mr. Deanson, at that charity fete at Twickenham. Do you remember?
Yes, I remember.
Well, I really must go now, Serena. Goodbye, Mr. Deanson. I hope we shall soon meet again.
The pleasure would be mine, ma'am.
Goodbye, my dear. I will send you hourly bulletins.
How horrid you are.
Pray, do sit down, Mr. Deanson.
I prefer to stand or even walk about, ma'am.
Would you like to return to the drawing room? It's much larger.
The bulk of my life has been spent in different circumstances to those in which I now find myself. I am well accustomed to handling men and dealing with sudden crises when they occur, but not this sort of crisis.
Crisis? You alarm me, Mr. Deanson.
Lady Harrington, we are comparative strangers.
Even comparative strangers might be able to find some stretch of mutual ground, or should I say, track, on which to meet. Might they not?
In this case, they most unfortunately have.
Unfortunately?
This is terrible.
I can only hope you deal with your railroad crisis with more dispatch than you're dealing with this one.
I would rather face a faulty viaduct, a landslide, and an engineer's strike than tell you what I am obliged to tell you.
Come to the point, Mr. Deanson.
Your husband has left you.
Yes. Yes, I know he has.
You know? How long have you known?
Only a little while. A few minutes before you arrived.
I am deeply concerned, ma'am. Deeply sympathetic. Please believe that.
Thank you. You have my sympathy also. Hubert, my husband, left me a note. It was brief and mentioned no names. Your wife, I presume, was more explicit.
Oh, no. She merely stated in her note that she had left me. She mentioned no names either.
Then how could you be so sure that my husband was the man she had eloped with?
I guess.
Yes.
They have been seeing each other a good deal during the last few months.
Have they? I didn't know.
A friend of mine happened to meet them accidentally.
At the zoo?
So you did know?
No, that was a guess. My husband has utilized the zoo for some time.
It must have been a terrible blow.
For you also, Mr. Deanson.
Oh, no. I received my note this morning. I've had the hours of the day in which to adjust my mind to the situation.
Time is a great healer.
I mean, for you, the suddenness of the blow must have been shocking.
Violent shocks are often accompanied by a merciful numbness. Have you been married for long, Mr. Deanson?
Nearly 9 years.
Have you decided on any specific course of action?
Certainly I have. There is still time to avert complete catastrophe if we act immediately.
Act immediately? What can we do?
Follow them and bring them back.
We don't know where they've gone.
I do. The Villa Zodiacs in Guam, De Fleurs, Alps, Maritimes, France.
How did you know? How did you find out?
Some years ago, I gave Charlotte, that's my wife.
An attractive name.
Thank you.
Provided it isn't allowed to degenerate into Charlie.
It hasn't so far.
Pray continue.
Some years ago, I gave my wife a ruby and diamond necklace on the occasion of our second anniversary.
Very thoughtful.
It is now being reset at a jeweler's in Bond Street. She gave secret instructions to her maid to forward it on to her by special courier.
I expect she felt she'd be lonely without it.
It was to be delivered to a Mrs. Baxter Ellis at the address I have just told you.
Baxter Ellis. Now I remember. Some years ago, my husband was very strongly attracted to a Mrs. Baxter Ellis. You're quite sure of the name?
Quite sure. I cross-examined her maid for 2 hours this morning. She finally broke down and confessed.
I know the Villa Zodiac.
You do?
Yes. My husband and I took it for the winter in 1865.
You will accompany me there at once?
Certainly not.
But Lady Harrington...
It would be too vulgar.
Please, Lady Harrington. Apart from you and me, nobody knows as yet what has happened.
It would be intolerable, degrading.
Do you love your husband, ma'am?
I think you go too far.
Never mind about that. Do you?
Unlike your wife's maid, I shall not break down under cross-examination.
But see here, Lady Harrington.
I am not in the habit of discussing my private emotions with comparative strangers.
Well, you'd better break that rule, ma'am.
I'm sure the railways of America owe a great deal to your forceful character, Mr. Deanson. But kindly remember that I am not an American railway.
Without plain speaking, we shall get no place.
As far as I can see, there's no place to get.
We are in the same boat whether you like it or not. Our only chance of averting a scandal is to pool our resources.
Our resources are too divergent to pool successfully.
Heaven give me patience. But Lady Harrington...
I have nothing more to say, Mr. Deanson.
What have I done to offend you? To banish all reason from your mind?
I'm not accustomed to being spoken to in that tone.
For the love of heaven, woman, what has got into you? I didn't ask if you loved your husband out of idle curiosity. It doesn't matter a nickel to me if you love him or not. All I wanted to find out was the degree of your affection for him, and whether or not he was still strong enough to help save him and his name from public opprobrium.
The meeting is now adjourned.
I ask your pardon for one thing. My impertinence in daring to call upon you. Good day.
Mr. Deanson.
Yes?
Please do not go. You asked me if I love my husband. The answer is yes. Definitely yes. But I love him now, without illusion. The years have banked down the fires, leaving a pleasant, protective glow. He has a kind heart and is incurably romantic. His search for romance only began with me, whereas mine ended with him. He is also feckless and irresponsible to an alarming degree, and, of course, excellent company. My life without him would be perhaps more tranquil, but immeasurably dull.
Thank you for your confidence, ma'am.
And you? Can you tell me the state of your heart before we start on our journey? A fair exchange. Are you in love with your wife?
No. Time has banked down my fires also. But I am fond of her. Too fond to allow her to break up her life if I can possibly prevent it.
Mr. Deanson, when do you propose to leave?
Tonight.
Tonight? Oh, dear.
I made all the necessary reservations early this afternoon in the hope that you would agree.
What time does the boat trade leave?
8 o'clock p.m. from London Bridge Station.
Will you be kind enough to meet me at the barrier at 7:45?
I surely will, ma'am.
Foolish, anyhow, for us to be seen together at the Opera, Hubert.
Unfortunately, yes, but we can't be furtive indefinitely. I had hoped that my love was strong enough to still your social conscience.
Oh, my insistence on discretion is for both our sakes. We are bound to encounter unpleasantness sooner or later. It'd be silly to meet it halfway.
There speaks authentic Boston.
Oh, you know nothing of Boston.
I've read about it, Charlotte. And you shall be the first to show me the first families.
Not until we're married, Hubert. Not until our divorce is over and done with and forgotten.
How wise you are, my sweetest heart. No Bostonian would receive us in our present state. You shall return to your home a marchioness.
Serena will refuse to divorce you. I feel it in my bones. She's a woman of strong character. You frequently remarked upon it.
Yes, she has a will of iron. She has petrified me for years.
She'll undoubtedly follow us and petrify you again.
Never. I've left Serena. She'll know this is final, and she's honest enough to admit defeat. But what if your husband should elect to play a dog in the manger? What if he should refuse to set you free?
Axel? Axel won't refuse. He won't care enough. Mary is his first love, last love, and only love. To him, I am less than a locomotive.
A tender. A lonely, loving tender.
Oh, Hubert.
Anyway, it shall be as you say, my precious dear. We shall stay in our fortress and dine on the terrace in the moonlight. The nightingale shall provide our opera. At least they won't sing Mozart.
I cannot bear you not to like Mozart.
Your loving hand shall guide me to his perfections. There will come a time when his every mathematical semi-quaver will be clear pleasure to me. But be patient. My ear is deaf to all music save the sound of your voice. I have very little ear, anyhow.
You're talking nonsense again.
When I was young, it took me 7 months to learn on the banks of Allan Water.
Oh, it's no use. Pretending.
Pretending what?
That we're happy. Enclosed in a lovely private dream with no outside world to menace us. Nothing to worry about.
Is your part of the dream wearing thin already?
Yes. Oh, yes, it is.
A meager little dream. Barely more than 40 winks.
You won't admit it, then? That there is a strain in the air?
Do be quiet, my dearest. You're frightening away the morning.
We must go away.
We are away.
There are too many people near us here.
No one that we know. Excepting poor old Octavia Bonington.
I don't know poor old Octavia Bonington.
Then you shall. But I warn you, she may alarm you.
Hubert.
She lives just nearby and writes fiercely in proper books under a pseudonym. None of her relations will have anything to do with her.
Then why should we?
Because she's incurably sentimental. It would give her pleasure to welcome two runaways, two ecstatic social outcasts. We'll call on her today.
We will do no such thing.
We mustn't be selfish. We have happiness to spare. We are bathed in illicit bliss. The least we can do is share it.
Share it? Well, you must be mad.
Think what it would mean to her. An elderly eccentric living alone with an aging pug and a curiously thick-set majordomo.
Well, Hubert, will you stop talking? Whenever you embark on a sentence, I feel as though you were off on a long journey and that I'm... wave you goodbye. I will not call upon this Octavia, whatever her name is.
Bonington.
Oh.
Why do you weep so frequently, my angel?
I've already told you. I'm unhappy.
How can you be unhappy in paradise?
Maybe I'm beginning to realize it's a fool's paradise.
Charlotte.
Oh, I'm bewildered, insecure, deafened and blinded all the time by your exuberant romanticism. Our situation is difficult and... for me, haunted by the dread of humiliations. Your continued refusal to share my fears, your determination to float through the air indefinitely, it terrifies me. I'm beginning to suspect you're not in love with me at all. You're merely in love with the idea of being in love with somebody, anybody.
If I kissed you, would you forget my infamies and forgive my verbosity?
I do not wish you to kiss me.
Let me press my lips on yours, my darling. Then we could quarrel again later.
No, Hubert.
Yes, Charlotte.
It's almost time for lunch.
I find this difficult to forgive, Serena.
I'm glad to know we still have something in common.
Axel!
There seemed to be no one about in the front of the house, so we came round by the terrace.
There's a bell outside the front door, an exceedingly loud bell.
Here is your necklace, Mrs. Baxter Ellis, delivered by special courier.
Thank you.
How have you come, Serena?
I should have imagined the reason to be fairly obvious.
On the contrary, I find it most obscure. What could you possibly hope to achieve by this tasteless twofold intrusion?
Let us dispense with artificial bluster, Hubert. Say something, Mr. Dienson.
Hmm?
The conversational burden so far has rested only on my shoulders. It isn't really quite fair.
I am at a loss, ma'am. When I am at a loss, all but the crudest phrases elude me.
Perhaps you would like to speak to your husband privately, Mrs. Dearson.
I have nothing to say to my husband now or at any other time.
There's a great deal to be discussed, is there not, Mr. Dearson?
There surely is, ma'am.
Thank you. That was at least a contribution, with only a minor one.
There is nothing to be discussed, Serena, except by our lawyer.
I intend to discuss it fully from every angle. That's why we are here, is it not, Mr. Dearson?
This is a heck of a mess, and you are a pernicious philanderer, sir.
Please remember your promise, Mr. Dearson.
Yes, ma'am, I am sorry.
Mr. Dearson promised me on the journey to restrain his temper, Hubert. He is a man of naturally strong feeling. He is also in the pink of condition. I beg of you, in your own interests, as well as in the interest of general decorum, not to try his patience too far.
I am no more impressed by Mr. Dearson's physical prowess than I am by his uncouth manners.
Do remember that having eloped with Mr. Dearson's wife, you're in no position to criticize his manners. I should be obliged if you would pour me out a glass of wine. The journey was exhausting.
A little wine, Mr. Dearson?
Thank you. I will help myself.
By all means. Charlotte?
No, thank you. What time is luncheon? I'm exceedingly hungry.
You intend to stay to luncheon?
We intend to stay indefinitely.
Hubert, I really...
Hush, my treasure.
Considering that this is virtually the only sound that has emerged from your treasure since our arrival, it's unkind of you to discourage her.
You've always been a hard and determined woman, Serena.
Not quite always.
What could you hope to gain by making this tactless excursion?
All I'm trying to do is to salvage a little of our mutual dignity. Mr. Dearson?
Yes, Lady Herndon is perfectly right, Charlotte.
I'm sure she is. Perhaps if she hadn't been so frigidly correct for so many years, this situation would never have occurred.
Please come out onto the terrace. I wish to speak to you alone.
I've nothing to say to you.
Charlotte has flitted from your self-made world, Mr. Dearson. She will never return.
Charlotte is returning to England with me immediately, if I have to carry her there by force. And apart from your noble heritage and your fancy talk, you are nothing but an irresponsible, frivolous libertine.
Now, look here, Mr. Dearson.
And if you are unwise enough to indulge in any further equivocation and battle, it will give me enormous pleasure to knock you senseless.
I dare say you... Good heavens, Spivin. Please come in, Mr. Spivin.
Am I intruding, my lord? No one about in the front, so I came round by the terrace. Oh, I hope that your ladyship is rested after that long and tedious journey. We met in the buffet at Boulogne, you know, after a most disagreeable crossing.
My husband has omitted to introduce us. I am Lady Herndon.
Understandable
mistake, Mr. Spivin. My husband escorted Mrs. Dearson to the buffet at Boulogne, while Mr. Dearson took me directly to the train. I was a little under the weather.
Oh, my wife was quite right after all. She was positive that Mrs. Dearson was not your ladyship. We argued about it quite heatedly all the way to Paris.
Perhaps you will take a glass of wine with us.
Oh, no, thank you so much. I really must be getting back. I happen to be passing on my way home. I hope you will forgive the informality, Miss Order.
Delighted, Mr. Spivin. Goodbye. Come into the garden, Charlotte. This room is suffocating me. Come, my dear love. Come out into the sky, away from the dangerous endeavors of those who so implacably wish us well.
You're quite content to let them go, Mr. Dearson? Out under the sky?
Certainly, ma'am. They'll be back soon. It is beginning to rain.
Good morning, Mr. Dearson.
Oh, good morning, Lady Herndon. Would you care for some fresh coffee?
No, thank you. I've already breakfasted in my room.
I trust that you slept well.
Quite well, thank you, but not enough. I feel a little tired.
May I take this opportunity of telling you how profoundly I admire you?
Thank you. You're most encouraging.
Your handling of this whole darn situation is beyond praise. You have displayed qualities of endurance, patience, and determination that Abraham Lincoln would have envied.
Mr. Lincoln abolished slavery, whereas I've only been fighting to reestablish it.
There is bitterness in your voice.
There's bitterness in my heart, Mr. Dearson.
Eliminate it, man. It will stain your shield. This is a trivial adventure.
Is it? I wonder.
Measured against the world's deepest sorrows, of course it is. We must not, even in the interest of self-justification, magnify comedy into tragedy. Tragedy inflicts far deeper wounds than those we have suffered. Our cause is merely an assertion of pride.
Bully for you, Mr. Dearson.
Are you laughing at me?
No more than at myself.
Well, that's a healthy sign, at any rate.
Come over to the window.
Uh-huh.
You see that village on the hill?
I see it.
Below the church is a clump of cypresses. And there you can look out all over the olive groves to the sea. When Hubert and I had this house, we drove up there in the moonlight one evening. We were younger then. It was the year before my son died. It's an evening I shall always remember, detached from everything else. Would it be a healthy sign if I laughed at that, too?
Perhaps not a guffaw, just a grateful smile.
Have all American railway magnates so light a touch?
Sure, every man jack of them.
What spoils will the day yield to us?
Courage, man.
Each of us leading home in triumph a whimpering hostage. Poor pickings, Mr. Denson. An insignificant little victory. I cannot face the humiliation.
Oh, to think that a few cypress trees could wreak such havoc. A whiff of memory. A stab of nostalgia, and down you topple from your pedestal.
Your misplaced badinage has all the subtlety of a herd of buffalo.
That's better.
I will not accept your decisions as to what is better or worse.
As you say, ma'am.
Kindly remember, we're still strangers to each other.
Stuff and nonsense. This darned high horse of yours is too frisky. You mustn't allow him to bolt with you.
Mr. Dienson.
You have every right to lose your temper with your erring husband. You have no right whatsoever to lose it with me.
How dare you speak to me like that?
Dare? What have I to fear from your high-bred tantrums?
Once and for all, Mr. Dienson, I will not be spoken to like this.
Nonsense! Also, poppycock and fiddlesticks. Stop that!
Good morning. I'm looking for Acton, my husband.
Delighted to hear it. He's in the garden, I think.
Thank you. I'll go out.
One moment, Mrs. Jensen.
We have nothing to say to each other, Lady Harrington.
On the contrary, taken all in all, we have many mutual interests by now.
This is an impossible situation.
I agree. That's why I wish to speak to you.
Surely everything's been said that could possibly be said. I'm near breaking point.
Where's Lord Herndon?
I haven't seen him since last night.
Do you really love my husband?
As long as you get your own way. So long as scandal's averted and the situation saved from your point of view, why should it be of interest to you whether I love Hubert or not?
Because his happiness is of great importance to me.
Oh, happiness. Really, Lady Herndon.
We've been married for many years. I know him well.
He's in love with me.
I'm fully aware of that. He was in love with me once, you know.
A very long time ago.
He's been in love many times since. There was a German actress called Lotte Schell. She had large china blue eyes. Then there was a Mrs. Railston. She had an excellent figure.
There is no need for you to give a list of your husband's mistresses.
You should at least know their names, if only for reference. He's bound to allude to them from time to time.
What's your object in telling me all this?
Merely to prove to you that with Hubert, the stage of being in love is impermanent.
I see.
And to find out what, if anything, you have to put in its place when the time comes.
The time may not come. Hubert may continue to be in love with me.
Pigs might fly, Mrs. Dienson, but as a general rule, they don't.
There's one fact you've overlooked. He's never, with the other ladies you mentioned, made any personal sacrifices, has he? He's never left you before. Never been prepared to jettison his name, position, and reputation for any one of them. He's done this for me, Lady Herndon. And there can be no other reason, except that he loved me enough to consider it worthwhile.
Perhaps they were more foolish than you, or more kind. Willing to accept him on more generous terms. Oh, you have a lot to gain. If I were to divorce Hubert, and your husband willing to divorce you, you could eventually marry Hubert and return to America as the Marchioness of Herndon.
Oh, you shock me, Lady Herndon. You really do.
Don't be silly, Mrs. Dienson. Oh, there you are, Hubert. Mrs. Dienson and I have been having a little chat.
How nice.
Oh, for heaven's sake, take me away. Don't let me ever... speak to her again.
My dearest heart, please try to control yourself.
What happened?
Your wife has broken down again.
Now, see here, Charlotte.
Give us some wine, Mr. Dienson.
I don't want any wine. What have you decided to do, Hubert? I want to know now.
You mistrust my love for you. You're betraying me in your heart. I can feel it. I can feel it.
Well, your life is won, Hubert. You realize you're bound by all the years of a dominance to give in, to squirm on the ground with your legs in the air like a beaten, faithful spaniel.
Only a moderately faithful spaniel.
Your wife asked me a question that I didn't answer. She asked me if I really loved you. Will I answer it now? And the answer is no.
Charlotte.
Axel, I return to London with you whenever you wish. I'll also endeavor to right the wrong I've done you. Forgive me, Lady Herndon, for so nearly shattering the admirable facade of your married life.
It would have been a cruel thing to do, as it is so obviously all you have left.
Well, I hope you're satisfied, Serena. You've achieved your object. You've ridden roughshod through my private heart until there is nothing left but emptiness and desolation. You're not a woman. You're a juggernaut. I shall never forgive you for this. Never. Never, never, until the grave closes over me.
We have won.
Yes, we won.
A little wine?
Thank you. Poor pickings, Mr. Dienson.
This should be a moment of exaltation.
I know.
Did he really love Charlotte, do you suppose?
Hubert never loved anybody. Not even me.
Then he's a sad and dull man, an insensitive fool.
He thought he loved me. All of our life together was his idea, really. I merely carried it out. Even coming here, he relied upon it. He expected it. I know he did. Please, don't let me keep you here, Mr. Dienson, if you wish to follow your wife upstairs.
I should like to finish my wine.
Shall you be returning to America shortly?
Yes, I'm impatient to be gone. The social life of London that Charlotte so enjoys is to me nothing but a restless vacation. Come to my country one day, ma'am. Let me take you in a private car from Chicago to the West, a car especially designed by George Mortimer Pullman. Its luxury will soothe and startle you. From the wide windows, you will see the new world passing by.
I remember your invitation. I will also remember...
What is it that you were about to say?
It was of no consequence.
Please, do not withdraw. It seemed to me that perhaps, at last, we were becoming friends.
We will always be friends.
Do you mean that, ma'am?
Yes, I do.
The carriage will be here at any moment now.
I know.
Goodbye, Lady Harrington.
Goodbye.
There you are, my dear.
You say that as though you've expected me to be somewhere else. I'm usually here at this time of day.
Yes, yes, I know you are. Those darn street organs shouldn't be allowed.
On the contrary, I think they should be encouraged.
In heaven's name, why?
The sound has a certain charm.
Stuff and nonsense.
Poppycock, fiddly-dee, stuff and nonsense.
Serena, what on earth's the matter with you?
Oh, nothing. Nothing at all. Would you say that, on the whole, our marriage had been a success?
What an extraordinary question.
Leaving aside the unfortunate episode of Charlotte Dienson last year, would you say that our long years together had been reasonably happy?
Of course I would.
It's not quite enough, is it?
What on earth do you mean?
Till death do us part. Life provides so many reasons for parting. Death, only one.
What has prompted this soul-searching, Serena?
Hardly soul-searching. Merely a light, introspective summing up.
You're leaving for Herndon this evening?
Yes, on the 7:15 train. Alfred's meeting me with a dog cart at Deal.
Why the dog cart? It'll be dark by the time you arrive.
There's a full moon tonight, didn't you know? The sea will be calm, and I shall be able to see the lights on the French coast. So near, so very near.
Well, there may be a fog, or at least a heavy sea mist. It usually is about this time of the year.
There won't be tonight.
I'm willing to admit that you're a brilliant organizer, Serena, but surely even you must stop short at arranging the climate.
I'm so glad you think I've been efficient. You would give me a kind reference, wouldn't you, if you had to? Honest, sober, industrious.
What are you talking about?
I'm not sure that I know.
I'm afraid I shan't be able to get down before Saturday. I have to dine with that fellow Mallory on Friday.
Which fellow Mallory?
I told you about him last week. He's an Irishman.
How delightful.
He's also a first-class shot.
The Irish usually are, aren't they? I suppose they have to be.
That's what I want to talk to you about.
Shooting?
No, Mallory.
Oh.
I've decided to go to East Africa with him.
Hubert?
Yes. He's a professional big game hunter. He's organizing an expedition and has invited me to join it.
Do you think you'll enjoy that sort of thing?
Why on earth shouldn't I?
You've always been so careful of your creature comforts. I find it difficult to imagine you charging through tropical jungles with a gun.
You don't hunt big game in tropical jungles.
Of course you do. There are swarms of insects and deadly snakes. and the air is so stifling that you gasp for breath. Remember the fuss you made about the heat only last week at Lord's?
I'm leaving at the end of the month.
I see. How long will you be gone?
6 months, at least.
So it's all decided?
Yes. Do you mind?
No, no, Hubert. I don't mind. Why should I? Will it be a large expedition?
Oh, about a dozen, all told, I believe.
Anyone know?
No, I don't think so.
And you like this man Mallory well enough to spend 6 months in his company?
He's an engaging fellow. Occasionally witty and always agreeable. There will be the others.
Yes, yes, of course there will.
Are you angry?
No, not in the least.
Well, it was perhaps inconsiderate of me to decide to go without consulting you.
Were you afraid that I might raise objections, put difficulties in the way?
No, not exactly. I expect I was a little afraid that you might laugh me out of it.
Poor Hubert.
Why do you say that?
Chained to a dragon.
You overdramatize yourself, my love. You're no dragon. Merely a woman of extreme sensibility who has become suddenly bored with her own social rectitude. Poor Serena.
How perceptive you are.
I regard you, my dear, with the most fearful respect.
Tempered, I hope, with at least a residue of affection.
Will you miss me when I've gone?
I've missed you for years. Oh, Miss Catchpole.
Lady Harriet Ripley.
Oh, my dear Harriet.
Serena.
Bring the tea, will you, Catchpole?
Very good, my lady.
How are you, Hubert?
Well, thank you, Harriet. Monotonously well.
Well, that's more than I am. This heat is completely exhausting me. You must be longing to get down to Herndon, Serena.
Indeed I am. Are you dining in, Hubert?
No, I'm meeting Harry at Boodle's at 6 o'clock. I must go and change. I won't wait for tea, my dear. I'm sure you and Harriet have much to gossip about.
Indeed we have. I feel, Harriet, that you should be the first to know that Hubert is leaving me.
Serena?
He's going to hunt big game in Africa.
Good gracious. Will you like that, Hubert?
Of course I shall. Why shouldn't I?
I can't imagine you stalking solemnly for days and days across the African veldt.
I'm not going anywhere near the African veldt.
But you, of all people, you who set such store by the luxuries of life.
Both you and Serena seem to regard me as a sort of spineless sybarite, an aging ninny who is afraid of getting his feet wet. You're both entirely mistaken. I am sick and tired of this stuffy, insular groove in which I've been stuck fast for years. I long with all my heart and soul to get out into the open, to lie under the stars by a flickering campfire, to fill my lungs with fresher, cleaner air, to rest my eyes on new and strange horizons.
Well, at any rate, I hope the weather will be nice.
The weather will not be nice, Harriet. It may be unpredictable, hot, cold, dry and wet to excess, but it will never, never be nice.
There's no occasion to bellow at Harriet, my dear. She was merely wishing you well.
Ah, here's the tea, thank heaven. I'm quite prostrate.
As I shall probably not see you again before you leave for the station, I'll say goodbye now, Serena.
Very well, dear.
And goodbye for the moment, Harriet.
Goodbye, Hubert.
You may expect me on Saturday, Serena.
Saturday? Oh, yes, of course, Saturday.
Tell Alfred to meet me with the trap. I shall arrive on the 2:30 from Cannon Street.
Yes, Hubert. Oh, Hubert.
Yes, what is it?
It's only that I do wish you well, Hubert. With all my heart. Truly, I do.
Why, Serena.
Goodbye, Hubert. I've got cream in your tea, Harriet.
Oh, thank you. You look flushed, Serena. Almost as though you were feverish.
I think I am a little feverish. Don't be alarmed. It's a mental state more than a physical one.
Why? What's caused it?
I haven't the remotest idea. Isn't that extraordinary?
Most extraordinary. Has anything happened? Anything disturbing?
No, I can't think of anything.
Where did you have lunch?
With Etta in Kensington. Ronald and Elizabeth were there, and that moist young man from the German embassy whose name I can never remember.
Gerhard von Spiegel, I expect. He always goes everywhere.
Can't think why, can you?
He's supposed to be very intelligent.
He betrayed no telltale signs of it at luncheon. All he did was to eat a great deal and discuss the Princess of Wales's fringe.
Go on.
And then I came home, and Miss Frances arrived to do my nails. And that's all, really.
I must say, I don't know what we should all do without Miss Frances.
She's certainly an excellent manicurist.
She's also a positive mine of information.
Is she, indeed?
Did she say anything about that rumpus at the Massingham's?
No.
I should have asked her. It's a fascinating story.
I don't encourage Miss Frances to gossip.
Then you should, my dear. You miss a great deal.
Harriet, you really are incorrigible.
She can be very entertaining if she chooses. After all, most of our friends employ her.
Unwisely, it would seem.
It was she who first told me about the Dinsons last year.
The Dinsons?
She, Mrs. Dinson, ran off, you know, to the south of France with a man called Baxter Ellis. And her husband had to go and fetch her back. I believe there were the most appalling scenes, but it was all hushed up.
And how did the redoubtable Miss Frances find out about it?
Through Mrs. Dinson's maid, apparently. Do you mean to say you didn't know?
No. I'm singularly innocent about things like that. I always understood that they were a devoted couple.
But you saw quite a lot of them. You must have guessed that something's amiss.
They dined here once or twice, that's all.
If you ask me, I think he's a bit of a dark horse.
A dark iron horse.
What did you say?
Oh, nothing.
He's back in England, you know, without her.
Is he really?
Violet Trevor saw him at Kew Gardens last week with a mysterious woman.
Heavily veiled, I trust.
As a matter of fact, I believe she was. Will you mind, Hubert, going to Africa?
We must ask Miss Frances. She'll be bound to know.
No, but seriously, do you? It was rather a sudden decision, wasn't it?
It'll do him a great deal of good. Take him out of himself.
It will also take him out of harm's way.
Harm's way? What do you mean?
Oh, really, Serena?
What are you hinting at, Harriet?
Hubert has a new friend.
That doesn't surprise me. He's naturally gregarious.
Well, this one is brunette and vivacious. I'm told she has a charming singing voice. Untrained, but absolutely true.
Hubert has no ear for music, so it won't matter whether her voice is true or not.
Do you seriously mean to tell me that you know nothing about Hubert and this Mrs. Mallory?
Mrs. what?
Mallory. She's Irish. So is her husband. Oh, apparently they're rolling stones, always travelling about the world. It seems that he, Mr. Mallory, is none too scrupulous over money matters.
And the wife? Is she unscrupulous too?
Very, I believe.
Oh, poor Hubert.
That's what I meant when I said that the trip to Africa would take him out of harm's way.
I see it all now.
Is he leaving soon?
Yes, at the end of the month.
Oh, well, that should be a great relief to you.
It is. Oh, it is.
Why are you laughing?
Because I feel gay. I felt gay all day.
You're certainly in a very strange mood.
All at once, everything seems vibrant and sweet and full of furtive excitements.
Furtive excitements? What do you mean?
How do I look, Harriet? Tell me, can you see any crow's feet, any wrinkles?
Oh, how absurd you are. Of course I can't.
Do you think there's still time? It's not too late.
Something must have happened to make you behave like this.
What is it? The hurdy-gurdy, perhaps. Or the sudden vision I had of poor Hubert filing away so diligently at his chains.
Chains?
The stubborn romantic. The eternal troubadour, still eager to sing his lilting ballads to anyone who'll listen. Oh, how dull I've been to him. And how cruel. Have some bread and butter.
I don't want any bread and butter. Why should you accuse yourself of being cruel to Hubert when you know that... But for your amazing patience and tolerance, your married life would have broken up years ago.
Would the world have come to an end if it had?
No, but the world might have laughed at you, and that would have been intolerable to your pride.
How right you are, Harriet. And what a terrible indictment.
Indictment?
Yes. To deny the spring of the year for fear of mockery. What a fool I think.
Oh, what nonsense. Hubert's a middle-aged philanderer and old enough to know better.
Charm is independent of age. He will always have charm.
Do you still love him?
Yes. I think that for the first time, I love him enough.
And what can you possibly mean by that?
Are you quite sure you won't have some more tea?
No, thank you. I have to go.
I wish I could make amends.
What for?
For being so unsatisfactory. We've been friends for so many years, and I've given you so little, dear Harriet.
Good heavens. There are tears in your eyes.
I know.
You are unhappy. I knew it.
No, no. On the contrary, I'm very happy indeed. Goodbye, Harriet.
Goodbye, my dear.
He rang, my lady?
Yes, Cashville. Has his lordship gone to the club?
He left a few minutes ago, my lady.
Will you give him this letter when he comes in tonight? I shall be gone, and it's rather urgent.
Very good, my lady. Will that be all?
Yes, Cashville.
This is your reserved table, sir.
Thank you. I will call for you when the Paris train is about to leave. A garçon?
Monsieur?
You wish for a coffee or chocolate, milady?
Coffee, please, with milk.
Black for me. Black and hot and strong. Serena?
Just the roll.
I trust that milady and monsieur had a pleasant crossing.
Lyrical, thank you.
And milady?
I had no idea the Rubicon could be so calm.
Pardon, milady?
Thank you so much for your courtesy.
Her ladyship is traveling incognito. The name is Baxter Ellis. Mrs. Baxter Ellis.
Entendu, monsieur.
Thank you.
At your service.
What a kind man. So handsome.
I could hardly take my eyes off you.
Do you always like your coffee black and hot and strong?
Yes, it's part of my character. No compromise.
How admirable and how reassuring.
Do you need reassurance, Serena?
Oh, yes, that's all. I'm a prey to agonizing fears.
I, too, have my fears.
Name them, and they'll slink away.
The principal one is that you may, in time, become irritated by my roughness, exasperated by my ignorance of your own ingrained tradition, and by my lack of grace.
I've also dreaded that contingency.
You have?
I've envisaged moments of acute social humiliation when you suddenly spit in the fireplace without saying excuse me. You might also get drunk regularly on Saturday nights and knock me about. When one elopes with an uncivilized ruffian, one must be prepared for anything. There's your coffee. Hope it's black enough.
Thank you. I promise never to spit into the fireplace. We will have cuspidors in every room.
You may become irritated with me first. My ingrained tradition may infuriate you one day and turn your heart away from me.
I will love you forever. Until the end of time.
You said that in Kew Gardens only the other day.
You said the same thing, word for word.
You were seen there by a friend of Harriet's. It seems you were accompanied by a lady heavily veiled. I do hope it was the same day. Good heavens, there's Mr. Spevin.
Oh, Lady Herndon, what a delightful coincidence. Mr. Jameson.
How do you do, sir?
Fancy our meeting again so unexpectedly, and here of all places. Is it not extraordinary?
Miraculous.
I trust that his lordship is well, Lady Herndon.
I'm afraid he's a little under the weather this morning.
Oh, I am so sorry. Nothing serious, I hope.
Oh, nothing serious. He'll recover in next to no time.
And Mrs. Jameson?
She's in America. She had to visit her lawyers. Family matter.
Yes, I see. We are on our way home to England for a week or so. My daughter, Gwendolyn, has been seedy for some time, poor child. The Riviera climate never really agreed with her, so we are taking her to my sister in Abergavenny.
The contrast alone should work wonders.
Are you on your way to Paris?
No, we are returning to the Villa Zodiac.
Oh, well, I must not keep you. My wife and Gwendolyn are already on board. They'll be wondering what has happened to me.
Goodbye, Mr. Spevin, and bon voyage.
Thank you, your ladyship. My wife will be so sorry to have missed you.
Remember me to her.
Good luck, Mr. Spevin.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
The sun is coming up. The dawn of our first day together. If this were a dream, you would tell me, wouldn't you? You wouldn't let me go on sleeping in foolish bliss until some clanging bell dragged me awake.
There it is. There's your bell.
Still sleeping. Now I know I shall never wake.
Axel, were we wise to choose the Villa Zodiac? Was it an error in taste?
We had to go there, taste or no taste. It's where we fell in love.
This last year's been so long, I don't remember.
I do. Every moment is burned into my brain. Every gesture you made, every word you uttered.
Did you know?
What?
About me, I mean. Did you hear behind my words the pounding of my stricken heart?
Yes.
Tried to keep my secret. What a waste of time.
Every moment of our lives has been a waste of time. Till now.
If only you and I were younger. If only we had more time.
There is time enough, my dear love. Time and to spare. Come, we must go. There's the courier.
In tonight's Lux Radio Theatre presentation of Quadrille by Noel Coward, you heard Roger Service and Maureen Adair as the Marquess and Marchioness of Herendon, and Glyn Day and Margaret Milner Smythe as Mr. and Mrs. Axel Deanson. James Irwin was the Reverend Svevin, and Merle Wayne was Lady Harriet Ripley. Others in the cast were Jack Payne and Mervyn Goodman. Quadrille, by Noel Coward, was adapted by Margaret Hume, produced for Lux Radio Theatre by Anne Freed, and directed by Henry Diffenthal.